Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and an elite ball progressor, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
I mean, relatively in comparison to the rest of the midfield, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say so. this episode's going to be an absolute barrel of laughs, isn't it? I can't bloody wait to get stuck into it.
We're going to make you feel all right. We're going to make it... Oh, maybe not, actually. No, never mind.
I don't think we are. But it is what it is. And we have to just ride with it, I guess.
We'll work through it. We'll process it, Windy.
Yeah, the thing is, I do... This is how I feel better about things, Spurs-wise. Like, just... I like to talk about it and process it. After the game, actually, I said on the Discord, like, everyone should just get outside, go for a walk. It's really nice outside. Go and chill and do something different to distract yourself. And then I went for a walk, and whilst I was walking, I was on the Discord discussing the game, mm-hmm. which was kind of counterproductive. But I did feel better afterwards. Before we get stuck in, I just want to very quickly send some love to Sean Walsh from the Oh What a Night podcast, who's going through a pretty tough time at the moment. And Sean is just such a funny, smart voice on Spurs. I really enjoy listening to him and reading his tweets. He's a lovely person also. So I just wanted to send some positive vibes his way. On Patreon this week, Bardi, you released Bardi's book club episode.
Yeah, it was great fun. I sat down with Ewan and we chatted about his book, We Are Sunday League. We spoke about the very Britishness of Sunday League football, what it means to get up and run around a muddy pitch, refereeing decisions, and the kind of growing up in 90s North London as well, which was quite a difficult place to grow up in if you were a Spurs fan. It's not so, well, up until this weekend, it was a nice place to be if you were a Spurs fan, then things changed a little bit. But yeah, it was nice. We were of similar age and it was nice to share similar memories and thoughts on football. So go check it out if you're a patron, obviously.
Nice. So this is Ewan Flynn, who writes regularly for our newsletter also. He's a fantastic writer. He has an incredible memory for detail, which I am very envious of.
Especially bad moments of our history. Like, he could recount like the 94-95 team. He knows all their squad numbers off by heart. He's written some amazing stuff on George Graham being one of our most successful managers. And the like, yeah, he loves a bit of misery.
So that's why you two are so perfectly matched. yeah, Ewan's great. Really appreciate him. Let's just get it over and done with. Let's pull the plaster off. A thrashing at the hands of Crystal Palace. Bloody hell, that was tough work to watch. And I sort of feel like we should discuss this. You can always discuss it in two ways, like as a whole, a 3-0 thrashing, which was really depressing, or like as a part. Before the sending off.
Yeah.
Because it was also really depressing, albeit in a slightly different way. Okay, so what we know is a couple of very damning statistics from Opta Joe. Our two shots was our lowest in a Premier League game since August 2005 against Blackburn. And to be honest, I think the second shot, which was a Lucas header, I think he was trying to play on to Kane. I've watched it back a couple of times and it doesn't look like he's actually going for goal. I think he sees Kane making a run and he's trying to head it on. So the other shot was the one where Lucas went on a mazy dribble outside the box and hit it straight at Guaita. And the other statistic is that for the very first time in his Premier League career, Tottenham's Harry Kane had neither a shot nor a touch in the opposition's box in a game where he completed the full 90 minutes.
Should have taken the cash, mate.
We're definitely going to talk about Kane a fair bit. So there's been six matches where Kane's had two touches or fewer and zero shots. Three of them were against Man City. One was against Liverpool, one was against Everton, and one was against Crystal Palace. And that is pretty, pretty damning and pretty miserable. I'm also intrigued by Nuno's post-match comments. So here's what Nuno said after the game. We just look at the game, so we had a lot of obstacles during the game to overcome. It was not easy for the boys today, but in the first half, I think we were in control of the game. We didn't create too much, but didn't allow too much also. Correction, Nuno. Seven shots, four of which were inside the box, none to us. So both teams were in the game, but like you said, the team losing a player and all these things, but I think we overcame that, and at halftime we spoke, and the perspective was to improve in the second half, but it didn't happen. And then he was asked, was the lack of creativity and attacking threats a concern for you? He said, it is a big concern. We had enough quality and talent to play better. We didn't do it. Credit to Palace. They were aggressive and they didn't allow too much time on the ball. We lost duels, many, many situations that I think we should do much better. In terms of offensive, much improvement is required. I mean, I found the performance pretty offensive. Bardi, what were your feelings about this horrendous match?
I mean, I don't know where to begin. On Saturday after the game, I was in the garden and I was throwing a tennis ball for my puppy to chase. And as I threw the tennis ball, she then got distracted by something else and then got distracted by something else. She didn't know what to do or where to start. And I'm kind of like that with this game. Do you start by going after the midfield? Do we start by going after Kane? Do we start by realizing that Lucas's kind of moments of dribbling maziness is our kind of way of attacking now? Or do we go after our defence? Or do we go after Ben Davies? I don't know where to start. Or maybe we just scrap this and just say, this is what happens when you have players running off for international duty and you don't know how you're going to get them back in time. And you then have a youngster whose the whole defence was built upon Tanganga, if you look at it, and you have him lose his mind and nobody, Harry Kane, our leader, was unable to calm him down. You see, I don't know what to start with, so I'm going to step back and let you guys pick which discussion topic we go after, because like Nuno, I'm a little bit lost with this game. I don't know where to start.
I get it. I completely get it. There's so many issues. And I think a lot of them are of Nuno's own making, if I'm completely honest.
And Tottenham, in general. We laid the blame at the club last week about players going off and playing for their international duty. And so Tottenham are partly to blame as this as well. And Harry Kane being that disinterested and that just lumbering around and not pressing and Dele having to almost cover for him is another factor that we need to think about.
So I would say I agree with you that we were massively at a disadvantage with three players missing for quarantine reasons. But that said, we still had a better 11 out than Palace by some distance. In my opinion, we've got a more talented 11 than Palace by a distance.
But this has been a factor with Tottenham over the last 2 years, that we keep thinking we've got a better 11, but do we? Is Winks that good? Is Schoenberg that good in the role he's currently playing in? I'm not sure.
They're better than Kiarte and MacArthur. In my opinion, they're better than Kiarte and MacArthur.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to just appreciate the other team has just got a better system, a better setup and a better way of playing that almost overcomes our individual talent, especially when you're missing Son. And Spurs have been this club that have just swung a big axe at teams and has been able to knock them over. But with Kane not interested and Son missing, it's pretty weak first 11.
So Nathan, let's do some tactical dabbling. This was quite an interesting match tactically because Spurs changed it up a little bit. So this is how I saw it. You can feel free to correct me if you think I'm wrong. So we had our back four, we had our three in midfield, and then rather than having a player left, a player right, and Kane down the middle, we had Lucas playing a sort of half and half role between a striker and a right-sided winger, and then Dele playing So I think when we didn't have the ball, Dele was playing at the tip of the midfield. He was stopping a pass into Kiate, like Lucas was stopping a pass into MacArthur. And when we did have the ball, Dele was sort of asked to then cover out on the left. So his role was, again, use your legs, use your incredible stamina and physical attributes and cover two roles. And my thinking, I think the thinking behind that was, we don't need to worry too much about Joel Ward. Palace's right back, he's not very good, but we do need to worry about Zaha. And it allowed, you know, with winks on Gallagher and Skip kind of either side of Benteke, it allowed Huibier to keep an eye on Zaha a little bit more. But I didn't like the system at all. I mean, as soon as I saw that midfield, I didn't think we'd win the game, to be honest. Nathan, what did you see and why were we doing what we did?
What were we doing? Well, okay, so just on the formation, like I just saw it as like a mix between a 4-3-3 and a diamond, and that we switched it up between, and it was kind of fluid, and I don't think it needs like a great debate on sure. what it officially counts as or what it goes down on paper as. For me, I don't feel extremely strongly about this game, to be honest. So Nuno won Manager of the Month for his performances, 3-1-0 wins, and up until the red card, this was, I think, quite in line with what we saw against Wolves and quite in line with what we saw against Watford. This is the way that his teams kind of play, you know? Obviously, massively hampered by a bunch of players being out for a bunch of different reasons. And that bringing us down to the point where we're literally creating nothing at all. But stylistically, it's very much just the same performances. Obviously, the City performance was good, impressive in all of the context. But I don't care too much about what happens after the red card, because it's not too relevant for what happens next week or the week after. Mm-hmm. And what happened before the red card was bad, but not quite as horrendous as it feels now looking back, because I think, like, if you think about like the Watford game, if you take 60 minutes of like, oh, this isn't great, and then maybe we push a bit more at the end and we get a couple of good subs on, and then we get a late 1-0 winner, and it's, you know, another 1-0 to the Tottenham, and it's a very different thing. And I think that we feel very differently about the opening 60 minutes if we come away with a win, basically. So yeah, I'm not like completely thrown off by this. I talked about this on the previous episode a bit, I think, but it's like there are a lot of mitigating circumstances with this result, especially obviously the red card I'm fully buying into, but prior to the sending off, the mitigating circumstances of it's early under Nuno and new players still haven't come in and a bunch of players out for this specific game and all of those kind of things, and all of those are totally relevant and worthwhile to go into. but this is kind of what Nuno's football is like sometimes. Like, I mean, the thing is that like every manager is going to have bad games, right? We want to talk about like attacking, entertaining football, free-flowing football. That's the promise. That's what the conversation is kind of about at the moment, is like, where's this entertaining free-flowing football? It's like, if we brought someone in who like absolutely does, like Pochettino, right? If you think about Pochettino, like, yeah, he played entertaining, attacking, free-flowing football, if that's what you think of it as. But like, if you go back to his first season, there were tough games. There were struggles, like, because, like, okay, attacking is partly a stylistic thing, right? This is a manager who wants his team to keep the ball. This is a manager who pushes players forward. This is a manager who picks attacking players. But also attacking is like your team are being successful in having the ball when they want to have the ball. Your team are being successful in getting into the final third, wanting to be in the final third. Your team are successful in scoring goals and score goals. So, like, there's an extent to which attacking just means good. And there's an extent to which attacking is like stylistic. So like, even if we bring someone in who stylistically is very attacking, they can still have terrible games where they can't have the ball and they can't get shots away, right? So to make out like, we could have just gone for an attacking manager and we would have always attacked and we would have always been happy is kind of silly, right? And going again back to Pochettino in his first season, like, it takes a while for managers with philosophies, as you're seeing now with him at PSG, to like get those things properly implemented. Nuno for me isn't that way at all. Like, his best seasons is his first season at Valencia, his first season, or his only season at Porto, his first season at Wolves. He hits the ground running because he plays a not immensely complicated attacking pattern. Yes, it will help when we have Ndombele in the team, and yes, it will help when we have Lo Celso in the team, but the idea is that, like, the idea that you should give Nuno lots of time, like, as a general principle, I'm behind that. Of course you shouldn't write a manager off on five games, but I'm telling you, I'm here to say, no, this is kind of what you get. I think it'll get better. I think it'll get better, but I think there will always be games like this, or there will always be the threat of games like this. Maybe not the red card sending off and then the abysmal ending, but there will always be the opening 60 minutes like that. And we'll get results along the way. But I don't think that this hits the promise of attacking, free-flowing, entertaining football at all. Mm. And I find Nuno a likeable character, and I think that we're going to be all right, and I think we're going to be in safe hands. I think we're going to bring three young players, and that's something to be positive about. But I don't imagine Nuno sort of reinventing himself as this wonderful, brilliant, free-flowing, attacking style of football manager. And we are going to get games like this because the ball progression is dependent on sort of lobbing it into an area where a winger can control it and make something happen on their own a bit.
So on that exact point, because I wanted to then follow up on a question about the specific team selection. And I completely accept what you're saying, and I agree, and I think that's why I feel a bit down about it. So accepting that this is just how Nuno plays, this is Nuno ball, and this is like the worst case scenario of Nuno ball where things just don't click for whatever reason, etc.
And it's not going to be like this most weeks, you know?
No,
it's not.
No,
this isn't going to be
and,
all the
and,
time.
You know, we've got Son to come back in, he's a wonderful world-class player, and he'll make things more exciting, and Bergwijn, etc., etc.
Very much so.
But within all of those remits, caveats, within all of that, in this particular match, the selection of Winks in midfield was so utterly bizarre because as we've already stated across all of our podcasts, I think so far this season, having Skip and Højbjerg in the same midfield naturally makes it less attacking, less progressive, more safe. To add in a player who's good at the volume passing, at the safe passing, who is fine at the base of this midfield as an eight, as like in the role that Dele's been playing, and Dele's been playing it pretty well, the link, if there is one, between the midfield and the attack. To me, that was, I'll say that was almost sort of setting out to be difficult to beat rather than setting out to win the game.
I don't think that's really the intention. Yeah, I wanted to see Hill.
Dele. Play Dele there.
Well, yeah, but okay, and bring in Hill to the team and move Dele in, keep Dele in that role, essentially. But I wanted to see Hill in place of Winks, right? Mm. Or like maybe if Ndombele had been like really doing great in training and was looking fit, then maybe Ndombele. But I wanted to see a more attacking lineup. I don't think this is Nuno, like, I don't think that his attitude towards the game is like, let's try get a draw here, of course. But I think that it's like, I guess he just didn't.
I think it
feel
unintentionally
that
was, you know. I just think that team selection, he must know what that team selection is going to do, because Dele's not like a natural creative, like by himself. Like, he's not going to create it by himself. Dele needs players to link round.
Sure.
So you're kind of putting him in a position where that's difficult for it to happen naturally. You've got Lucas on the right who carries the ball well but doesn't do anything particularly creative. And then you've got Kane totally and utterly isolated. I mean, I'll talk about Kane later, but I spent 15 minutes earlier watching every Kane touch and interaction, and it was utterly miserable because he was feeding off scraps. There was nothing there for him. It was ridiculous what he was working with. And in putting Winks in midfield, you're essentially saying the most attacking of our midfield players is Pierre-Emile Højbjerg.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing going around at the moment is the notion of three defensive midfielders, and well, like, that's obviously going to set me off because they aren't playing their most defensive role individually in their game, right? So Højbjerg's job is to sort of do the running up and down, and Winks is meant to be sort of more expressive with his passing in that game. Their role isn't to, like, three players screen the defence, right? But their profiles as players is that, like, what you could say about all three of them is that they're all safe passers, right? Mm-hmm. They've all achieved recognition in elite football through keeping it, well, Højbjerg not so much at Southampton because the remit's very different there, but they've all develops really sound, safe passing games, right? They play low-risk football a lot of the time, or they have done, play low-risk football a lot of the time. And then they come into this system with Nuno, and it's all very high-risk passes. It's all very super fast attack. It's all very make the play happen immediately. And that just, like, isn't a suit for, like, how those three players think about football. Which is not to say that, like, it's completely beyond them, but, like, I don't know. None of them are suited to the way that we played, and we played all three of them at once.
Yes.
And I think that's where a lot of the fault does lie on Nuno, because he chose that centre midfield, and I don't know why he didn't opt for Hill and play Dele. I thought Dele was one of our better players, and I think he's been one of our standout performers this season. So why we moved him from midfield trio into the forward line, I'm not sure. We lost all balance there, and you're totally right. They're not defensive players per se, but their passing options are so defensive, or their pass selections are so defensive or so inoffensive that they make them defensive. They're a bunch of wellies. You can pay £90 for them, like a pair of Hunter wellies, but you're not going to wear them to the disco, and that's what those midfield trio are.
Nice.
Yeah, and then, you know, he didn't help himself with his other selections either, in my opinion. I think the Wink selection was really problematic. I mean, I was not that annoyed at the prospect of Winks playing when I thought he was going to be deputising for Skip. When he was selected with Skip, I was just baffled. But then I think also he didn't need to remove Tanganga from right back. I thought Tanganga against Sahal at right back would have been a good selection, and play Roden centre back, who, you know, came on, played really well. So that was a choice that he made as well.
I thought Emerson was okay. I thought Emerson was all right. He had a tough time.
Yeah.
Zaha played pretty well, and I thought on the whole he did okay. He managed him pretty well. He got forward in the occasions we were able to keep the ball and allow our fullbacks to get forward. I thought he did fine. There's nothing there. There's no red flag for me.
No, I agree. But I just think moving two of your better performers in Tanganga and Dele out of the positions they've been performing well on was questionable. But it didn't need to happen. He could have played, as Nathan and you have said, he could have played heel left wing. He could have played Tanganga right back and Roden centre back, and then there would have been a bit more continuity, I think. Bardi, I can tell you're chomping at the bits to talk about Harry Kane as well. So we had two questions about Kane, Cronescast and James S. They both roughly asked the same thing. Like, is it just Kane playing badly? And Cronescast specifically says, are you concerned about Kane's performance?
I am a bit concerned about Kane's performance. I don't think this is him down in tools and not giving a shit anymore, but I am worried about how he's playing and how he's moving. Today is the anniversary of us smashing Dortmund 3-0 at home in the Champions League in the group stage. And there's a second goal that Kane scores in that, where he just makes Hummels look like a child, bats him out the way, charges from about 45 yards out, and then just levers into the top corner of his left boot. And I couldn't believe that's the same forward. He just doesn't look the same, doesn't move the same. And this is my concern about Kane. If he doesn't have people running off him, then I'm a bit worried about him. And he played a lot for England this week, and he just looked heavy. Like, not physically heavy, but he just looked like he was made of iron, and he didn't move around the pitch well. I thought he got dispossessed quite a few times. He got bundled over by their centre-backs. And I thought his passing was a little bit loose on occasion when there was a counter-attack offered itself up. I'm a little bit worried about his performance. He hasn't scored in the Premier League yet. I know he hasn't played a lot of minutes, but yeah, he's not looking like the £150 million striker that we were desperate to keep hold of.
I just think we didn't pass him the ball, to be honest. I think we didn't really get the football near him, so I'm not too concerned.
I was a bit concerned about his lack of pressing, though. Everybody else seemed to be trying to press, and he just kind of stood in the middle.
So I actually thought the same thing. And then when I spent those 15 minutes earlier watching him back, I was quite surprised to see actually some pretty good, particularly backward pressure from Kane. He's actually labelled as Y-Scout as aggressiveness in terms of his pressing, which I was surprised. And I could tell that he was getting frustrated because he was dropping deeper and deeper into midfield to try and win the ball and pick it up, which he does when he's not getting service. But honestly, like the what he did get, the passes he got were so awful. It was, there was nothing for him to work with. He was getting it like, in bad positions, like on the wing with his back to muscular defenders who is then having to wriggle past, and then there was like another man to get past as well. So what's he going to do? He's not Messi. He can't do it all by himself. And I sort of do share Vardy's criticisms of the sort of lack of fitness, because I thought he looked heavy as well. But I agree with Nathan ultimately that we didn't get the ball to him. And this is the big thing for me. Kane's a cheat code. We've got Harry Kane, we've got Son Heung-min, and when you've got players that are that good, everything you do should be about getting Kane and Son the ball in and around the penalty area as much as possible, and just let them do their thing. They will score many, many, many goals for you. And Mourinho didn't do it. He tried to find a way to get Son in the position where he was through on goal with Kane's passes, mm-hmm. but he didn't get, like, Kane had an extraordinary number of goals and assists last year, but his shot volume was not that impressive. And I genuinely feel that if his shot volume had been higher, he could have broken his previous records for goals. And I think the same again. I think we're not going to give Kane the opportunities that his ability merits. I feel like if we just change the system up a bit and focus on winning the ball a bit higher, sustaining possession, and getting Kane the ball in and around the edge of the box, we will profit so much from it. And we're missing an opportunity here.
But is this where we are now with Kane, where all of a sudden he's now become a player where we have to provide service to? He used to be a player that could just do that himself. So he's now becoming a penalty box striker. Is that what we're saying? That he can't do the shots? Like before, he would just do it out of nothing, create it. And of course, there's the exception. There's the goal against Poland, etc. But from now on, we need to provide crosses and through balls to him. Is that what we're saying?
A little bit. But also, when he used to get the bits and pieces in our Pochettino days, he would be like latching onto those around the edge of the box because we'd be pressing high as a team, as a unit. Mm. Whereas now he's getting them on the halfway line. So there's so much still to do. And that's like, Kane's not the man physically he was back then, and I don't think we can expect the same amount of graft he got. So yeah, I definitely think we have to provide more. But also, if we were just doing everything we're doing slightly further up the pitch with a way of backing up our some sort of counter press, I really feel like he'd profit so much more. It just feels like it's the most obvious route to victory for us. Like, use Harry Kane to his best, and we're choosing to be difficult to beat first and foremost, and I find that really frustrating.
But there's a theory that I've been working on. Well, working on, I mean, as I stand in the shower and I wash my hair. football's gone, like, I love number 10s, like Baggio, Totti, Del Piero, these kind of guys, Riquelme, but they've become obsolete in football because they can't press and they're not part of the 11. And it's that kind of question, is does one brilliant player outweigh the rest of the team? So do we now have to modify our whole team to get the best out of Kane? And is that the way to move forward? Is that modern football? Can we afford to build this team around one player and then have him not get involved in the pressing and the rest of the build-up play?
Yes, I think we can. I think he's so good that we can. I think when you've got a striker who can deliver between 20 and 30 goals a season, you just do what you can to put them in front of goal in the best possible circumstances as much as you possibly can. I get what you're saying. Like, it's not going to... He essentially means that you can't have an elite pressing unit. But I think you find ways around that. And I don't think we are. That's not to say that we can't develop it. And I think, you know, Nuno's no idiot. He's a intelligent coach who has other ideas, and he's capable of much more. And hopefully something good will come from this awful result and things will be changed up. But I mean, I just want to see Kane. A zero touches in the box is absolutely criminal for a player of Kane's ability. We have to be getting him on the ball in the box and on the edges. We have to. We just have to. Otherwise, I mean, he's gonna leave probably anyway, but he's definitely going to leave if we don't get any touches in and around the box.
Fair enough. I just do have a fear that while we have a team that's unable to give Kane the ball, I think Kane is almost a bit of a weight to carry while we have this terrible midfield. Because I mean, I like Skip. I really like Skip, but Skip and Winks, I think, is worse than Winks and Sissoko.
It might well be. Yeah, it might well be. Let's talk about how we address the creativity. This is from Thomas Freeman, who says, "Would our lack of creativity be solved by adding one of Ndombele, Lo Celso, or Bryan to the midfield three, presumably with Dele and Huibia, or is it more of a systemic issue?"
Well, it's both. Like, there's if you put, if you drop Ndombele into that midfield in place of either Wings or Højbjerg, things get better.
Mm. So he's still doing the, like, the shuffling around, back in position, doing all the things that Nuno wants from his midfield, keeping it tight, keeping your distance with your other midfielders. But then when you get the ball, he's able to do more creative stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, it's a percentage better. It's a number of times more often we get into the final third with a ball controlled defeat. I think it will make a considerable difference, adding Ndombele and or Lo Celso, or both, or, you know, whatever.
Both
maybe. Getting, you know, adding creative players improves creativity. There's always, I think, going to be a shortfall to this style of, so if you think of our second game against Paços, where we hammered them with fast attacks, that is sort of, and also what we saw in preseason, to be honest, as much as it is only preseason, that is the football that Nuno wants us to be playing, right? And it is sort of high velocity, high intensity, shelling the ball at the opposition from distance and just sort of running them ragged with a high volume of sort of quite individual, quite separated fast attacks and shots from distance, and long passes. And like, when it works, it looks good, and when it doesn't, it looks bad. That's any system. But I think there's always going to be like some degree of weakness to that kind of attacking, and some, I think it's very easy to frustrate that style of attacking, maybe more than any other.
We'd accept being frustrated with that style of attacking over no attacking, which is what we saw at the weekend, though, right? And Nathan, the other thing is,
normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
He wants to do those things. That's his idea. But first and foremost, he wants to control the game. And the difference is, against Paços, he had control of the game because they weren't trying to attack. And in pre-season, he had control of the game because we were playing bad teams like Leyton Orient and Arsenal.
It's true.
So there's a sort of, there's a degree to which he has to turn the dial on the riskometer a little bit, I think. Give up a little bit of control, or be willing to give up a little bit of control for some attacking.
But I think that comes through the medium of swapping out, you know, one of Højbjerg and Skip for Ndombele. You know, that's where the trade-off is made.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think that's coming. I think that's, you know, within the next few weeks, we're going to see more attacking personnel as things sort of settle and players get fit and everything else.
Yeah, I think so. I think we would have seen Ndombele or Brian play had we not had an injury and a sending off.
Mm.
I think, like, the reason that I'm just sort of so at peace with Nuno is that I see his appointment as being fairly short term. So I'm thinking, like, yeah, okay, we're going to have some games like this, but in a year or 2 years, we'll move on from him. He will maybe have clinched a fourth along the way. We'll have had some good moments. We'll have developed young players.
Yeah.
And then we'll be ready for our next thing. And I think that, like, that's a completely worthwhile thing. You have to think about like the direction the club has been heading in over the last 2 years and everything else. Like if he comes in and he stabilizes, right, if he prevents the fall, prevents us falling any further, like if our aspiration right now isn't what it was a couple of years ago, it isn't to compete for the Champions League and the Premier League, because that's just not realistic. And when you're not competing for the Premier League and Champions League, it's because you have games like this sometimes. Maybe not quite that bad, but that's just, you know, Premier League is a tough league. Even the likes of Crystal Palace are going to give you a hard time if you're not like absolutely on it, and you can get red cards and that can really punish your game, you know? So it's like, as you know, if we have a season that's better than last season, which I think is quite reasonable, then we're headed in the right direction. I think we stabilize under Nuno, we bring through young players, we put some youth into our squad, and then we're ready for our next project. I don't think of Nuno as a project manager, and I think that a lot of the talk around Tottenham in media from the club itself is pretending that Nuno is like a long-term project manager. And I just think that if you switch that up, if you look at it differently, and if you say, okay, Nuno's going to come in and stabilize us, then he's still on way on track for that.
Yeah, I think that's a really fantastic point. He is essentially Ryan Mason with tactics. He's a good vibes manager. he's a lift the mood about the place manager, which is probably no bad thing when we've got Paratici doing his thing and bringing in a raft of new players. And actually, I had had a good conversation with Ricky from the Fighting Cock about this, who basically said, look, there was no one else. Like, we had to bring in Nuno because there was no other manager choice. And I don't quite agree with that. I think there were some other choices which I personally would have preferred. But I take the point that there weren't many managers out there that the fan base would have accepted as fine. And if it is short term and then we bring in Pochettino or whoever afterwards, then we'll all be fine with that, I'm sure.
So there's been a Nuno out voicing on social media today,
right?
Yesterday, day before, and I think that the reaction to that is to be like, wow, Spurs fans have become so spoiled and so short term mind and so quick to write off a manager early on, and there obviously that is true to an extent, to be calling for Nuno to leave now, but I think really instead it's fans who were not happy with his appointment at all in the first place, who have just waited for their opportunity to voice those frustrations, rather than people who've like been open-minded, given him a chance, then gone, nope, we've had one really bad game against Palace and it's time to get rid. It's people who said, hey, you know, who are calling Levy back on his promise and saying, where's this free-flowing, attacking, entertaining football that you said this isn't that guy. And I think they're right.
I mean, you said he's a lift the mood manager, but if we lose to Chelsea and then we get knocked out of the cup by Wolves, and then we lose to Arsenal, then we got Villa at home and Newcastle away, then what do you do? I mean, well, we've already seen the problem of my 38 1-0 wins is that our goal difference after one defeat is now back to zero. So that was my big concern. There's a problem that you can't lift the mood if you're being rubbish. You could be the nicest manager in the world, but if we lose our next three home games or our next three league games, then I don't know, where do you turn next?
But equally, it really wouldn't surprise me if we 0-0 Chelsea, because we have looked so resolute in the other matches.
I don't know about that, man. Lukaku looks pretty good.
And he does.
This is this new Lukaku. This one that's he absolutely destroyed the Serie A, and he's a wonderful, wonderful player. And then behind him, you got Chelsea's midfield and Kovacic. I mean, where did he get legs from? I'm a little bit worried about this match.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to be worried, given how badly we threw the towel in against Palace, and also because of all the injury disruption. Let's talk a little bit more about the game, because I feel like we've not delved as deep as we should. Bardi, so many little mishaps. Lloris overhitting a pass to Dier, which caused him to get a very nasty dead leg, as it's been diagnosed now. At the time, I thought, oh my God, that's ligaments, because it was so similar to when I did my ligaments. It looked like an impact injury, but it wasn't. Then we had Tanganga's moment of absolute madness. I mean, I got the first situation I get completely, because it was annoying that Palace played on when Lucas was down. Although that whole rule is weird and stupid anyway. But I get it. Like, that situation, I completely understand. But the second one, Bardi, you hinted at it earlier. He was hot-headed and he needed someone to come and calm him down and put an arm around him and say, look, get through the next 5 minutes. Don't let the blood rush to your head. He overhits one or kind of the ball bounces and it's there to be won. And he did pull out the challenge, but he was too committed to it already, etc., etc. It's an obvious yellow. Things just went badly wrong, Bardi.
I mean, the amazing thing about football is you can trace the path of a game back to a moment. And had Tanganga done a lamella, like against Martial, fallen to the floor when Zaha raises his hands, Zaha gets sent off.
Maybe.
And yeah, things are different. Things are totally different. And he didn't. And I respect that. At the time, I was really happy the way he stood up for Lucas, the way he stood up to Zaha, and the restraint he showed. But then you could see it as Zaha continued to wind him up and they were talking to each other and somebody needed to step in there. We talk about leaders and I hate the whole kind of thing, oh, there's no leaders on the pitch, but Lloris is there, Kane is there, Højbjerg is there, even Roden is an international player. Somebody calm him down, try to.
You need Eric Dyer to come over and sort him out.
Yeah, Dyer,
yeah. It's also, but it was a bizarre match, man, that Eric Dyer going off is normally something I'm quite kind of happy with, but... It was. It's a statement of how well he's been playing and how calm he's been. That, yeah, it went, the moment he went off, the game did start to ebb away towards Spurs because I thought we were okay the first 15 minutes or so, and then after that, it just kind of disintegrated.
And then Ben Davies did his thing.
I mean, six hours of not conceding a goal. Ben Davies comes on, and within half an hour, we've let him free, and he's given away a penalty. He's a bad, bad centre-back. He's not a very good left-back, but he's an awful centre-back.
He's really bad at centre-back. The penalty was stupid. And then the second goal, I think it was, he stands off Edouard far too much. Yep. He should be closing him down really tight, up his pipes. He's a fresh man on the pitch. This is his first couple of touches in the Premier League. Just get close to him, make it difficult. Don't let him get a shot away.
That penalty was so 2018. Nobody defends like that anymore. You see it now, how defenders, they've all got their hands behind their back. Yep. Not even Davinson or Aurier gave away a penalty like that. It's a ridiculous body position, and it's just somebody who's just not cut out. Especially, it's always hard to be thrown on halfway through a game. But yeah, he's not cut out for centre-back. He's not cut out for Tottenham.
Windy, should we be unbearable snobby dickheads about how good Edouard is?
Oh my God, yeah, he's a classy striker, I think.
It's a good go on it.
You know, I mean, I've been big on Palace's transfer window.
It's hilariously like how on the nose their window is, because it's just like every obvious transfer that like that you get shut down for suggesting on Twitter, basically.
I wanted Nathan Ferguson, they signed Nathan Ferguson 2 windows ago. I wanted Eze, they signed Eze 2 windows ago. Now they've signed Elise and Edouard, who I wanted. It's like, mm-hmm. and Anderson, who's, you know, when you look at him, he's one-on-one defending wasn't great, but he's a good passer from the back, so he suits their new system. They've done
Hughes also.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Conor Gallagher, who
would never come to us, but there you go.
Yeah, really, really good player.
But why would Tottenham not sign Edouard? It's a guy who's obviously signed to be backup for the start, at least with Benteke.
He'll come in to start for them before too long, I would have thought. He's too good to be on the bench. Yeah, but I mean, this is the thing. Vieira, it makes it so much worse because it's Vieira, doesn't it? And we have a history with him. But it was really impressive with lots of their key players missing. Really, really, really good from Palace. It's annoying how quickly he's established a new style and got them playing proper football.
I mean, I'm not sold on Palace. I still think they'll finish bottom half, but they've signed some nice players.
It's a big improvement, yeah.
Yes.
Quick mention to RR10 and Canervo, who submitted good questions, but I kind of feel like we've covered them in our general discussion anyway, so I'm gonna skip over those. I want to talk a little bit about the Son situation. It sounds maybe better than it did like a couple of days ago. All the talk around it made it sound like, oh my God, Son's done something really, really, really bad. But it sounds like maybe it's not quite as bad as first feared. I don't like it when Spurs don't tell you what's happening, though, because it makes you suspicious and it makes you think the worst. It makes you fear the worst. And they've been very tight-lipped about it. It sounds like Bergwijn should be back for the game against Rennes on Thursday. Son, perhaps not so, but then maybe he'll be back for Chelsea. If not, then the game after that. We ought to talk about Thursday and what kind of team you think we're going to put out. we're in a group now, so what it means is we can risk losing, and it's not the end of the world if we lose.
It would feel like the end of the world if we lost the first.
Right now it would, wouldn't it? Well, talk about that, Nathan. Do you think we should go full rotation with Chelsea in mind?
Yeah, I do. Partly because, like, you know, keeping our players fresh and injury-free for playing Chelsea, but also to, like, experiment with our options to bring Ndombele in, to get more game time for Heal, to try out sort of more attacking ideas, I guess, and more attacking personnel, and experiment with sort of our fringe players and get them going. And then maybe sub them off at 60 minutes to bring them on the weekend or whatever, but yes, definitely.
And Bardi, you've already mentioned that Kane looked pretty knackered from England duty. That means presumably Scarlett plays against Wren on Thursday. You're looking at quite a youthful attack.
I'm not sure Scarlett starts. I think after his performance in Portugal, he may be kind of kept away a little bit. I think Kane will probably start this game. I think because there's nobody else really to play. I think Kane starts, and I think we see Scarlett. I'm quite excited to see Jeremy Doku play for Reds. He's got some legs on him and some skills. So I think it'll be an interesting game anyway. And what it does do is, the good thing about the Europa League or Europa Conference, it does give us a new focus, and we can forget about Palace, and hopefully a nice win will set us up for Chelsea.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm not sure I'm into the idea of Kane playing against Wren and then Chelsea. Like you said, he's looking tired already, and he just looks like he needs freshening up to me. He needs a bit of a break.
I mean, he was just in Bahamas 3 weeks ago.
True, but he's played a lot of football in a short space of time with no pre-season, or very limited pre-season. That's never good for Harry Kane. He struggles with that kind of thing. Yeah, I guess we'll see how Thursday goes. I suspect Doherty will be back in, which won't be universally popular. Who plays centre-back? Maybe Tanganga and Roden together, possibly?
I think so. The most important thing would be getting Ndombele in minutes. I'm curious to see how he plays.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he plays really well on Thursday, do you think you'd have possibility of starting against Chelsea?
Yeah, definitely.
Straight in?
Straight in. I don't think we'll see the Winks Skip and Højbjerg trio for a long, long time.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because if Ndombele were to play well, which would be lovely, and Lo Celso returns and is fully fit, suddenly the midfield is looking a lot more optimistic. I mean, we've got the option of Skip or Højbjerg at the base. We've got Dele, who should come back in, and then you've got the remaining place, which would be Ndombele and Lo Celso. And that just transforms the ability levels, the attacking creative ability levels in the midfield completely, and makes us a much more exciting team. But I guess then it depends on how risk averse Nuno's feeling against Chelsea. Does he just go with the same sort of Skip, Højbjerg, Dele midfield? And
we could see a pretty risk averse lineup against Chelsea for sure. But then it's a derangement game, because the emphasis is on Chelsea to have the ball and make the play, and we get to play more like we did against City. So I'm not sweating too much about a defensive lineup, as it were, against Chelsea. It's after that. It's like it's looking ahead to Villa and everything else. It's a lot more long term than that.
Sure.
Medium term, I guess.
No, I think I agree with that. Before we wrap up, just a quick chat about Emerson. Bardi, you've already sort of touched him a little bit. Difficult debut against Zaha, who we know is one of the best, one of the most difficult wingers to play against in the Premier League. He handled it pretty well at times, but he did get turned. He got a bit too tight and got turned. Lots of defenders are going to get turned by Zaha. It's just what he does. But what did you think generally? Like, did you think he supported the attack well?
I thought he did okay. I thought he did try and nick the ball a few times and got caught out, but then he seemed to learn from it. He got riled a little bit, but I thought for a debut, it was pretty good. I'm not worried about him playing at right back. I think he's definitely a better option than Doherty, which is an improvement, and I'm happy with that.
How about you, Nathan?
Definitely like a nightmare matchup. So you have, in the video on Emerson, we looked at strong tendency to overcommit into tackles. And that's how he gets beaten 1v1. And you have Zaha, who is very good at baiting bad tackles and using his sort of his wide gate to carry through them and come away. So yeah, it's no surprise that, you know, he comes into a team, he hasn't really trained, he's straight in, he plays against his like worst possible stylistic matchup, and he doesn't do that badly. So like, it's like it's okay. And I saw some Spurs fans frustrated that he wasn't, you know, trying to dribble his man, and that is also something we looked at as just not part of his game, and that's going to cause some frustration. And if the idea in this game was to like condense the middle of the pitch defensively, muddy it up, and then attack down the wings through our fullbacks, then we were going to struggle to do that through Royale, because that's not really his game. He needs to combine. He needs to be on the overlap. What we did see on the left side was Reguilón would get free and burst up the left side, and then he'd have one option at the far post and he'd try to make it, and it would be really bad because it's just like a hilariously low percentage ball. He tried that two or three times and they didn't pay off, and he clearly realised, I'm embarrassing myself here, so now I'll just play it safe. And that was the end of basically all of our attacking for the rest of the game.
Yeah. I noticed a couple of times Royale made some good runs and wasn't found. And yeah. I thought maybe that's because the levels of passing ability in our midfield is not great in terms of switches. And he was getting a bit frustrated a couple of times. Like once he was waving, frantically waving for the ball. And I thought that was amusing because he was like, are you ignoring me on purpose? Is it because I'm new?
I haven't done my singing. I haven't stood on the table and sung my introductory song. What's the word I'm looking for?
Initiation
song. Yeah. No passes until you sing the embarrassing song.
Absolutely. No, that's fair enough. Don't pass to him. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think for a difficult first game, it wasn't the end of the world at all. And there's a lot more to come. I wouldn't mind him actually playing against Ren just to sort of get some confidence and familiarity with other players.
He is match fit. He's played for Barca this season already. So he's up and running, I think, pretty much.
He certainly didn't look tired. He kept going to the very end, which is great.
Yeah, it's just, as we sit here and thinking about the game, it's incredible how much we missed Eric Dier. There was literally no one who... The moment he went off the pitch, there was no one who could hit a diagonal because Rodon's not going to do it. Tanganga, Skip, none of them are going to do it. We did miss Dier's hit and miss long-range passing. Wow.
Failing to double down on criticism of Eric Dier?
Well, I like to think I don't hold an agenda. I can change. I can change a court. Normally, my agenda items are pretty correct, so that's why I don't have to change. But I'm not changing yet on Dier. But we did miss him, and we did miss those big shanks out wide. Yeah.
Shout out to Callie.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I agree. I think Skip has got some long range passing in his locker, but it's confidence, isn't it? That one he hit in pre-season on the half volley from right to left was exquisite, and I have seen him hit those quite a bit for Norwich as well.
But that's as the team are breaking into space for a counter,
exactly,
rather than like from a set position where there's 10 players in front of him.
Sorry, exactly, you said that. Winks. You said Winks, but you
oh, sorry,
Skip.
I meant Skip.
Did you?
Yeah.
I think Skip's got. Skip has good
long range passing.
Well, it's true for both of them. Like they both have some long range passing, but they're not going to be reliably just picking out inch perfect passes over the top again and again and again to carry an entire attack on the back of them.
I don't like Winks's long range passing.
All right.
I think there's some technical flaws in his long range passing. He puts backspin on everything.
Yeah, he does.
It's weird. But I think his forward passing is a little bit underrated, Winks. I think he can slide some nice balls forward well, but he just doesn't do it in the roles he's asked to play. And now I think he's so used to playing in a sort of low-risk, volume passing way that that's all we've got from him now. He just needs to move. He just needs to leave and go restart somewhere.
He is a broken footballer, and I can't believe that he didn't, for his own career progression, move on. I'm not sure why. Yeah, I feel sorry for him because Winks is an academy product, and there was big hopes for him, and you know the whole kind of narrative that goes alongside him. One of our own, it would have been great, but he needs to move for his own good. I don't dislike him as a person, but he's at the moment he's a terrible footballer.
There was a report that we'd asked for 40 million for him.
Bloody hell!
Yeah. I mean, that's just absolutely insane. 25 million would have been a price that I would have been very happy with for Harry Winks. I probably would have taken 15, if I'm honest. Anyway, that's enough processing of this. Probably been a bit downbeat, but it's difficult not to be after a 3-0 defeat to Crystal Palace. So hopefully next time we'll be recording after a win against Chelsea and we can be chirpy again.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at @DavyShambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.